of protesters have gathered outside a nightclub in eastern Berlin where the far-right Alternative for Germany is celebrating becoming the third largest party in Germany's parliament. Merkel's Conservatives won the election tonight, but they didn't do as well as they had hoped. And the Social Democrats also got their worst result in the post-war era. So the AfD are the real winners. They've gone from having 0% to 13%.
Amazon Restaurants has been around, I think, since 2015. They started it in Seattle. It was like a one-hour delivery service there. But it is small. It hasn't really, to this point, attracted many national brands. It's kind of a competitor to Uber Eats, Postmates, Grubhub, Seamless. And this is Amazon now having access, in theory, to up to 40,000 restaurants, 200 brands with 40,000 locations. So this is them really going hard after, you know, that big chunk of the restaurant market. We know they want groceries. Now they want restaurant food, too.
The U.S. president on Sunday signing a sweeping new order expanding visa restrictions to citizens from North Korea, Venezuela, and Chad, on top of five Muslim-majority countries that were already on the blacklist. The announcement comes just as Trump's original temporary ban was due to expire. The new policy will go into effect in mid-October and is permanent.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's September 25th, 2017. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, the start of another business week, another business day. Here at 5:10 in the morning, we have a big show for you this morning. Our CEO spotlight is coming up momentarily. Tom Gimbel is here. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network. A little later in the program, let's talk a little bit about climate change and how scientists are trying to prepare cities for the future, whatever that may bring in terms of how the weather might impact how we live. That'll be a little bit later in the program. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, for this Monday morning, Dow futures pointing toward a potentially negative open later this morning, off about 18 points right now. The Nasdaq is off about 9. The S&P is down about 3 points. In Europe this morning, markets are generally mixed, with the French market lower by about 15 points, in London by about 22 points. In Germany, markets are a little higher this morning. Asian markets are generally lower this morning, with the Nikkei. The only market that's really in higher territory, the Hang Seng, is off by about a tenth of a percent. The Shanghai is down by about a quarter this morning. In the oil market, oil at $50.69 a barrel, which is a little flat this morning. Again, as we head toward the opening bell later on this morning, some stories we're watching for you. The single currency European stock slipped after the bloc's most powerful leader, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, won a fourth term but faced a fractured parliament, and support for the far right surged. Investors seemed unnerved by the prospect of months of coalition talks, which could distract from negotiations with Britain over its divorce from the European Union and efforts to integrate the bloc's remaining members. Speaking of the European Union, the Union presidency says its time is running out for Britain to seal an agreement on leaving the EU, with a fourth round of Brexit negotiations about to begin in Brussels. The deputy EU affairs minister, whose country holds from Estonia, by the way, holds the bloc's rotating presidency, says we really need to move forward now. Time is of the essence. In the UK, the Bank of England is warning of a pocket risk in the rapid growth of consumer credit in the British economy. So there are economic concerns, too, as Britain pushes forward with leaving the European Union. Here in this country, the job market is tight. We're at or near full employment, and I bet you need something to give you an edge. Our first guest is always thoughtful and is happy to offer advice. Tom Gimbel is the founder and chief executive at LaSalle Network, a professional staffing and recruiting firm headquartered here in Chicago. Tom is in our CEO spotlight this morning. Tom, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Absolutely. Good to be with you, Steve.
Congratulations, too, by the way, to the LaSalle Network. It's 19 years?
19 years, and we just had our 19th anniversary last week.
Yeah, what does that feel like? Obviously, there's a lot of success there, but it must be gratifying.
It's funny. I work with a ton of millennials, like over 150 millennials work with at our company. But when you say 19 years like that, it makes me feel really old at the moment.
Yeah, so let's hit that. You work with a lot of millennials. What are the trends right now as you see them?
Well, right now, what people want, you know, I hear a lot about, oh, the work-life balance and millennials don't want to work hard and they're working. I don't believe any of it. I believe that the difference is millennials want experiences. They want to know that they're working side by side with their bosses. They don't want to think that their boss is out gallivanting around and doing stuff. They want to be in the trenches side by side and learning as much as they can and gaining that experience share. And that's what we try to do at our company, what we try to advise our clients to them.
And so what does that look like? Does that mean you just take a millennial under your wing and make sure you spend time with them? Or how does that look in the workplace?
No, there is an aspect of that, right? There's no reason, you know, I remember when I got into the business world in the mid-90s, meetings with clients were for the high-level people, and there was this traditional hierarchy. And my belief when I started my company, and I was only 26, was take everybody to the meeting. It doesn't make a difference. What clients want to know is that the work is going to get done and that people are knowledgeable and care about what it is. They don't care if the person is the stereotypical old boys club, 55-year-old white male, or a millennial minority. It doesn't make a difference anymore. The whole world's changed, right? They want good, smart, competent people who deliver. And that's what we try to show and teach and experience. But if we're doing a company meeting, it's not that much more money to rent out a cool venue than to rent out a ballroom at a hotel, right? Mm-hmm. If we need to get transportation to go from point A to point B, it's not that much more expensive to rent trolleys versus school buses, right? It's the little things that make every day or every week or every month a unique experience for people.
I've heard people describe that as tending the garden. And that sounds kind of Pollyannish, but it is. You're sort of getting that next level of people ready to take over, right?
And so to go on that analogy, Steve, there's all different levels of it, right? There's just cultivating the dirt. There's weeding the dirt. There's trimming the flowers. And if you're really fancy, you're going to go out and turn your bush into a rooster or something, right? And so you just got to figure out how much time you want to invest in the whole thing.
Yeah. Hedge art is that I think they call that. Let's talk a little bit, too, about something else. I mean, you must be on the front lines of, we hear so much on the show, too, about how we're at maximum job. All of the jobs are filled and maximum employment, I think, is what they call it. Is that the case, or are there still positions out there? And
the theory used to be that if you got around 4% unemployment, that you had maximum employment. That there's a certain level of employee of the market or the civilization that is unemployable, so to speak. I don't know if we're there necessarily. We're just at this influx right now between what people call the skills gap, right? Is that as things are changing from traditional manufacturing or factory warehouse jobs to more technical developers, computer programmers, things like that, that it's changing. So there are jobs, but we don't have the people that have the skills for it. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. What's happened over the past 10, maybe even 15 years, is that job hopping has become so acceptable in some ways, right? And that no one stays at a job long enough to actually get good at it. So I do something for 2 years. I don't really like it. I didn't get a raise, which means I'm probably not that good at it. I'll just go someplace else and see if I can get more money. So what ends up happening is you have this group of people that may actually have a skill set, but they haven't invested enough time to actually get good at it. And now you've got an unemployment rate. So when people say, oh, Main Street, there's all these jobs. This is a great jobs market right now. It's a great economy. And people want to say anything otherwise. It really is funny to see the political propaganda that exists.
Yeah, and on that note, I mean, we often hear, too, that the reason people don't leave their jobs because of stagnant wages is because it's so hard to move to another place. But you offer another argument there. That's an interesting argument.
There's people leaving their jobs every single day. And you know, social media is part of the problem and part of the solution. But everybody is probably 2 degrees away from somebody who's made $1 million on an investment or $1 million. My brother's uncle's cousin sister, right, was part of a .com, and I heard about. And we get people think, why not me? I'll tell you why not you. Because you're not working hard enough. The jobs are there, right? You got there's very few people that have actually created great wealth that didn't bust their butt to do it.
You mentioned already a little bit about the culture at LaSalle Network. Mm-hmm. Every year you guys make the lists, best places to work, best culture. What is it about LaSalle Network that puts you on those lists?
Two things. Number one, when we started doing culture, we didn't do it to win an award, right? So we did it to create a good place to attract people, to retain people. The byproduct was other publications took notice of it, and that was terrific. The reason it stays that way is because we fire people when they're a bad egg, and a lot of companies don't. We really need to get this work done. We can't let go of that person. And our feeling is I'd rather have fewer people doing the work of more people and have a great culture mm-hmm. than have more people and have some cancer floating around. I don't want that. I think you get rid of it.
Yeah, you talk about it as being cancer, but that's really the best way to describe it.
Because it absolutely
it does spread,
is.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it spreads. And the key thing is, and the reason I think, you know, when you talk to cancer survivors, literally taking the literal transition, you're in remission, right? But it never is maybe all gone away, and it could come back. And that's how you have to view it when you're running a company. Culture is like your health. And if you get a cancer, it can spread. And it can talk to other people, and all of a sudden it changes little by little. And if you don't remove it fast and quickly and efficiently, it's gonna eat up your whole body.
But there's also the argument too that a little bit of that is cancer prevention. Companies need to be doing more to prevent that from happening, don't they?
Yeah. So I mean, the old school, the air quotes Jack Welch way, was to cut the bottom 10%, and that's a performance driver versus a culture driver, but. You know, it's funny because, as you alluded to, we make the Inc. list for fastest growing companies. And one of the things that we talk about is, even if you have great corporate citizens, if they're low producers and you keep them, eventually the bar gets set lower and lower that's all you have to do to keep your job is to be better than the worst person. Well, you really want people who strive to be as good as the best person.
Fastest growing companies. You've just expanded recently too to Nashville.
Yes, we do business in about 18 different states around the country, but it's the third state we have a physical presence in. So we're in California, Illinois, and now Tennessee.
Interesting perspective you might have on Illinois as a place to do business and be in business. Having been in all of those other states, is there a difference?
I love Illinois and I love Chicago, and I'm a many generation Chicagoan. I would tell you that we are riding a legacy in the city, and with the increase in taxes and the crime that's coming, 10 or 15 years from now, I don't know if this city's as good as it is today.
And you mentioned taxes, because as we're sitting here, there's, you know, two huge property taxes this year in the state. There is another income tax, the sales tax, the beverage tax. At what point do the taxes become just too much?
I was talking to a staff person in my company, and the person makes about $60,000 a year, and they told me that they felt $80 a month on their paycheck change with the taxes. That's real money.
Yeah.
That's real money. And all of a sudden, their cable bill or their cell phone bill or whatever it is, they don't have that money anymore. And I think little by little, that starts to really hit the average worker. You know, if you're making a couple hundred thousand dollars, good for you. But you know what? That doesn't make up. That's the 1%. And I think the city's missing the boat on that. The state is, but no one wants to hear the tough news.
Is that a leadership problem? I mean, as a leader, you would know what a leadership problem looks like. Is that it?
No, I think it's how the message is delivered. I was talking to a state rep recently, a few months ago, and they said, you know what, I don't necessarily disagree with the stuff that Rauner wants to do. The problem is he came in and called everybody crooks and bad guys, so we didn't want to sit down with him after that. So sometimes the meaning can be right and people value it, but the message screws everything up. And I think that's a little bit of the problem between Springfield and Cook County and Chicago is the ideas aren't that bad. The message is a little messy.
One of the things about Tom, if you're listening, he also writes regularly for Inc. And I pulled one of them that I just absolutely love. It's, you have four simple morning habits that'll improve your day, and each only takes about 5 minutes. This is great because for those of us who are getting up very early in the morning, morning habits are the best.
Well, you know, the real problem on there is I didn't add the last one, which isn't in there, and that's listen to your show.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. I'm actually penciling that one in here, right? But talk to us a little bit about these, because, you know,
wait, out of those, is there one that you do or that stuck out to you?
You know, I have to say that the snooze button thing, don't hit the snooze button. When your alarm goes off, get up and jump right out of bed.
The key thing is, if you're going to work out, lay your clothes out to work out in the morning. If you're going to not work out and go to work early, have your suit or your jean, whatever you're like, make everything easier for yourself. But that snooze button, when you go to the bathroom, don't go back to bed, right? It is such the little things. And there's people who are so much more accomplished than I am that have written about this. And I think it was General Stanley McChrystal had written, make your bed every morning, right? And then at the end of the, you're setting your day off by actually accomplishing something. And to do that every single day, you've got to find the habits that work for you. But to have zero habits is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I get up very, very early, and I have to tell you, whenever I don't go back to bed after hitting that alarm, I feel like I've already accomplished something.
I agree
absolutely
with you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the biggest part of the day. What else do you – is there a mindset that you bring to your job that you might be able to share, or is there something that you tell yourself when you get up out of bed and get going in the morning, a word or meditation or something?
So two things. The first is I just started meditation about 2 months ago. A peer of mine suggested it, and it's been great. And I actually do it in the afternoon, too, because I'm an early morning person, and when I get a little bit sleepy after lunch, I'll meditate for 15 minutes and then I'm back. And that's been terrific. But the other thing is, the reason I'm an early person is because everybody else isn't. And that is my motivator in itself, is that I want to be working when other people are sleeping. Psychologically, it just makes me feel like I'm ahead before the day even gets going. Mm-hmm. And we're all competing. You're competing for ratings. I'm competing for customers. Sports teams are competing for players and wins. And what are you doing in the beginning of the day to get there? Because kind of off the beaten path here, but why is a field goal at the end of the game more important than a field goal that was missed in the first quarter?
Right.
I've never understood that theory, and that's kind of how I live my life.
Let's talk a little bit about it. We mentioned earlier taking workers under your wing, showing them the ropes. We've talked often, too, here about finding somebody to mentor.
Yeah.
As a CEO, do you do that, and what would you tell other CEOs about going out of, maybe even out of your organization, to find somebody to mentor?
So the problem is, especially with social media, is everybody's become more accessible and more public, and so more people ping you every day on LinkedIn or on Facebook or Twitter and try to get your time. So you can't do it to everybody, and you got to focus on your organization, but you also have to give back. I think we do a formal mentorship program at our company, but we do that because people want it and need it, and it's important. But I believe the best mentors aren't assigned to you. They're built upon random interactions and how you meet people and showing them the guidelines. And the needier you are, the less accomplished people want to spend time with you, right? No one wants to mentor somebody by showing them every single thing what to do. Mentorship is a piece of advice at certain points in time that guide people. It's not holding their hand and walking them down the path to school every day.
Let's talk a little bit about the future, not only for LaSalle, but in general. Are you optimistic about where the country's going? Are you optimistic about where LaSalle's going?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. I mean, we'll see what happens with North Korea today, right? But
yeah, right.
You never know. Right. However, I'm very bullish on the economy for the next. You know, if you would have asked me 8 months ago, I would have said, you know what, I think the end of 2017 will be a little slow. Now I would tell you I think it's 2019 or 2020, the next 2 or 3 years, I feel really good about. Our company, we've got a lot of runway. We're relatively speaking, we're a big company compared to probably 85% of my competitors, but there's 15% that are much bigger than us.
What would be your lasting advice to people who are out in the job force looking this morning?
I would say view it as the biggest sales deal you'll ever work on, whether you're in sales or not. You're selling yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you're 30 years old and you got 30 years left to live and you make $50,000 a year, that's a $1.5 million deal. Dress the part, act the part, practice. And if you don't practice interviewing, you'll never get good at it and you'll never get the job you want.
Tom, it's good to meet you. Best of luck going forward, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, Tom Gimbel is the CEO and founder of LaSalle Network in Chicago. You can read more about them, find more of them online at LaSalleNetwork.com, and follow them, too, on Twitter at LaSalle Network. We're going to continue our conversation, by the way, with Tom after the bell, and we'll post our full conversation in the podcast of The Opening Bell later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again. Welcome back to the program at 540. Glad you're here with us for a Monday edition of the program. Scientists have been studying potential long-term effects of climate change on urban areas, and their findings could impact cities like Chicago. Changes in climate will directly impact how cities are designed, from drainage systems to energy use. And one of the study authors of a new study is with us today. Ali Nazemi is assistant professor of civil and environmental engineering at Concordia University. The study he and his co-authors did focuses on the city of Montreal. Ali, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
This is an interesting study, and there's a lot of scientific information here, and I guess we bring it down to the level of our listeners this morning, but what was your finding as you studied how climate's impacting Montreal?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let me just give you a little bit of background. So we started this study with my graduate student, Pablo, and we wanted to really see the reliability of new NASA's product of downscale climate in our city, Montreal. And what we have done, we started to basically look at the 20 grids that represent the city of Montreal on NASA's system and compare the information that provided by simulations with what we actually have observed in the city from 1950s to 2004. And we were expecting actually by looking at the observed data to basically see some sort of signal of change. But we actually find two new kind of like interesting observations in our city that I guess it would be very interesting for your audience to hear. First, actually, we realized that, well, climate is changing. But one thing that actually it is very interesting is that the pace of changes is getting faster. And the other thing that actually we started to realize is that we realized that the climate is basically diverged in a kind of like in the area that represents Montreal. So it means that if we have kind of like a naturally 1 or 2 degree difference, you know, in around 1950s, that 1 or 2 degree difference in different parts of the city has started to diverge and become larger. So it means that the variability of climate is also increasing on the area. And then we started to compare the observation and simulation, and what we realize is that simulations that are provided obviously cannot capture exactly what is seen in the reality, but they have a very good capability to basically reproduce the evolution that is happening to climate. So now that we realize that they could be able to represent the evolution in climate in the past, perhaps they are reliable tools to look at the future projections and kind of like get a kind of understanding of what would be the city look like in the years to come. And interesting was to understand that these changes are even getting faster, and the divergences that we started to see in the historical period again started to become much more. So we expect to actually have a much more variable climate with kind of like a very outstanding spatial variability in a region of 125 by 125 kilometers that represent Greater Montreal and surrounding regions.
This is really the holy grail of engineering, civil engineering, isn't it? Because to get a handle, to be able to have a handle on what's going to be happening 20 or 30 years from now, we need to know that now as we start planning our cities, don't we?
Definitely, definitely. And that is basically what was the message that we tried to really communicate with manager in the cities, actually.
So based on your findings here, how can we extrapolate the data to communities like Chicago? I'm guessing Montreal and Chicago have a lot in common because we have this diverse weather thing going on here as well.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, definitely we do have our differences in the city, and perhaps we can talk about that later on. But what is actually going on is that, first of all, we cannot rely on historical observation to design our city. This is actually, I guess, the core message that we wanted to provide to urban planners, that this needs to be changed. And this requires severe change because the engineering paradigms is basically based on assuming a stationarity in design characteristics such as climate, which means that if you look at the historical past, then you have enough variability to design your system. Whereas our study, in conjunction with many other studies in U.S., Canada, and Europe, and all over the world, shows that actually this stationary, we cannot take it for granted anymore, and because of the climate change. And, you know, really, for the global environmental change that we have, we cannot take this stationarity assumption anymore. And we need to come up with a new kind of like a design paradigm, actually.
Because making the wrong decision could be very costly for planners, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, exactly. And that's why particularly in a city is very important, because is a very dense location with population and assets. I mean, the kind of like the outbreaking of Hurricane Harvey in U.S. and 180 billions of damage and losing life is actually, I guess, is a huge wake-up call for city planners, actually.
So what do we do with your findings and some of the findings of these other studies? Is there a model that can be developed from this information, or do we have to treat each community differently?
Well, definitely we need to treat each community differently, because, you know, one of the stuff that is actually going on with climate change is that the regional or local representative of global climate change can be very, very different. So basically we cannot develop a model and that extend that into other places, but we can actually develop frameworks and guidelines, such as kind of like a design guidelines, that these can actually be applied globally. But definitely the solutions would be very, very local. And that's actually one of the finding of our study. If the climate started to be diverse, even in a very small, you know, region such as Montreal, so basically this means that we cannot take a design value for one part of the city and then extrapolate it to the other part of the city, because definitely if the climate gonna be different, then the design value would be different. Either you're gonna have very kind of like an overestimated design that would be very costly, or it would be underestimated design that then create some problems later on if it is failed. So what we actually trying to promote in here is that really city planners need to look at the details within the city and the places that they want to implement a new design or they want to operate the infrastructures. And basically based on that and considering the fact that, you know, our projections of the future are very, very uncertain, they need to come up with new methodologies to look into that. And there are guidelines around. I mean, there are various stress tests that, you know, you try to basically test your system against a wide variety of like future signals and understand what would be the critical threshold that your system going to be failing. So there are things out there, but you know, really city planners and engineers need to be open and try to basically move on from the previous and conventional design paradigm, actually.
Yeah, no longer focus on a one-size-fits-all sort of solution. Ali, I wonder, are there areas of infrastructure that are more threatened in this than others? I know that your focus is on water, but I'm guessing water and energy?
Exactly. I mean, energy is very important because you see, you know, the heating and cooling energy that you use during the summer and winter is really depending on what is the temperature. So if the temperature started to be diverge and change, basically your energy use is going to be changing either in the summer or in the winter. And then the whole kind of like a management and the planning of the energy use that we have in a city perhaps would be revisited, and we need to actually look if the new patterns of climate going to create some pressure on our energy system as well.
Ali, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Best of luck to you in your future studies, and thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell.
Thank you very much indeed for having me. Take care.
Ali Nazemi is Assistant Professor of Civil Engineering and Environmental Engineering at Concordia University. We're going to link out to his study and also the information from this research as we focus on climate change and its impact on city infrastructure.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures pointing toward a negative open on Wall Street, down 17 points now. NASDAQ futures lower by about 2, and S&P lower as well. Gold and silver are mixed this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We begin this trading week with cattle traders reacting to the cattle on feed report last Friday, quickly termed bearish. Ranchers placed 1,930,000 cattle in U.S. feedlots in August, and that was about 3% above August a year ago. Analysts were looking at the number to come in 3% below a year ago. So that's a 6% swing in the numbers. And, of course, cattle that are placed on feed in August should reach processing weight in the first quarter of 2015. So there'll be more beef at the retail meat counter. And the placements were the largest for August since 2012 and the largest overall since May of this year. The grain market saw soybeans at a six-week top when the trade ended on Friday. Again, strong exports. They are again going into another round of talks to unravel NAFTA and rewrite it. U.S. trade negotiators will only partially unveil new text on modifying a key chapter on investment under NAFTA. But it looks like it's a process that's going to be much slower than originally thought. And the Lake County Farm Bureau will hold its annual meeting and dinner tomorrow evening, starting at 5:30 at the Marriott in Lincolnshire, Illinois. And I look forward to being there to be the guest speaker. So we'll see you in Lake County tomorrow night. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk and market outlook for this Monday, September 25th. Here's a couple of things that could impact the markets today. The FBI releases its annual crime statistics for 2016. The fourth round of Brexit negotiations also begin. Also, Time and Fortune CEO Leadership Conference is underway. A couple of other things on the daybook today. Former New York Congressman Anthony Weiner will be sentenced in that sexting case. Former President Obama addresses a Cantor Fitzgerald healthcare conference in New York at about 12 o'clock. That's a noontime event. Also today, more wrangling on Capitol Hill about the latest healthcare budget. The Republicans, sponsors of the new bill, Graham Cassidy, have unveiled a new version of it, which they will present to their Republican colleagues this morning in hopes of getting something passed by September 30th. Looking ahead for the rest of the week, tomorrow earnings from Nike, Carnival, and Darden restaurants. For Wednesday, the U.S. Energy Information Administration releases crude inventories. Thursday, earnings from Accenture and BlackBerry. We'll also get a report on U.S. gross domestic product for the second quarter. On Friday, Twitter meets with the Senate Intelligence Committee. Brazil unemployment data released. We'll also hear a speech from Elon Musk about the future of his Mars plans. He's appearing at a conference in Australia. Some of the things that could move the markets today and through the week right here on 720 WGN.